ओम अग्निमिनन्दस्य जनार्दनशलाकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयमुपगतामयं ददति सपदन्तिकम् वंशकपटुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. The last chapter of the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, final chapter, will speak about another incarnation of the Lord. In the previous pastime that we heard, due to the prayers of Aditi, the Lord incarnated as Vamanadev. And prior to that, when the churning of the ocean of milk was going on, the Lord empowered, he incarnated as Ajita, and he empowered. So he was doing everything practically in that entire pastime. And prior to that, he incarnated due to the prayers of Gajendra. So there have been many incarnations spoken about in this eighth canto. And now we will hear about the Lord's incarnation as Matsya, the fish. And then, towards the end of this chapter, Satyavrata Muni will offer prayers to Matsya Avatar, the Lord's incarnation as Matsya. And in that, in those prayers, we will learn something that's, of course, very important verse. Okay, the first verse. Maharaj Prickett said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is eternally situated in His transcendental position. Yet, He descends to this material world and manifests Himself in various incarnations. His first incarnation was that of a great fish, a most powerful Sukadeva Goswami," because this Maharaj Prickett had just heard, he's just heard about the Vamandev incarnation, and prior to that there was an incarnation of Matsya, the fish. So he says, "I wish to hear, O powerful Sukadeva Goswami." And why is Sukadeva Goswami powerful? Because he knows these things that are unknowable, practically speaking. Because to learn something and to know something that's totally from a different realm and beyond our experience, our current experience, takes a knowledge of a different sort, a method of an epistemology, a method of acquiring knowledge of a different sort. There are usually, Srila Jiva Goswami, I think, lists 10 different processes of knowledge. One of them is Anuman. Anuman means inference or logic. That because of this, because this has a texture that's similar to this texture and has qualities similar to that, we can assume that they're made out of the same material, they're both wood. And then there's other pramanas or methodologies of proof. One is what people say. And we use these all the time. Have you heard that such and such and such happened? How do you know? Well, I just read it. I heard about it. It's been said. And then there is the what we directly experience, pratyaksha, what we experience with our senses that gives us knowledge. But all these different methodologies of gaining knowledge are insufficient to give us knowledge about the Absolute Truth, which is beyond our sensual perception and beyond our power of inference and beyond what the people in general know. So to find out about the Absolute Truth, we use a different methodology, and that is called Shabda, which means transcendental sound. And the origin of this transcendental sound, as we'll hear later, is Krishna, originally. Just like no one can really know what I'm thinking until I tell them. No one can really know. You can have some inference. You may be able to know this. You may be able to know that. You may be able to look at my face and say, I can tell what you're thinking. You're afraid or you're happy or this or that. But to really know exactly what I'm thinking, the proper method is if I tell you. So Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that not even the great sages know his origin and can understand him fully. The methodology, on the other hand, of understanding Krishna completely is when Krishna himself reveals himself. So when there is an incarnation of the Lord, such as matsya, or a fish incarnation, the materialistic mind, which tends to judge reality by the methodologies of the epistemological methodologies that it's used to, such as just seeing things with their eyes and what people say, etc., 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 these things fall short because the mind is only, it's living in a very, very contained realm. We live in a very contained realm that's not actually reality at all. Everyone assumes that they have a grasp of reality. And when we see someone whose reality clashes directly with our reality, we'll think that something's wrong with them, that they're crazy. But actually no one understands reality, actually. Because we can only understand reality according to our capacity. To understand reality means to understand everything. Because that everything is it's part of what's there, what's real. So to understand reality, we have to understand everything. Everything in existence. Because if we understand only part of what's in existence, we'll only understand part of reality. We'll be missing some parts. So therefore, the only person who actually grasps reality fully is Krishna, is God. Everyone else just has a partial, according to their capacity. They have a partial understanding. But yet we're so arrogant. We think, this is my understanding. And therefore, it's so conditioned. My understanding is so conditioned by my body, just like a fish. He has a fish in a little pond. Or a bird, he has a particular understanding of reality. And he thinks this is reality. Try to tell a bird that life isn't just flying around and eating. What do birds eat again?
What?
Yes, exactly. And other kinds of bird food too, but life is meant for eating worms, they think. And try to tell him otherwise. This is his capacity to understand. Try to tell a businessman, a person who's thoroughly a businessman, who has it in his blood, try to tell him that life has a value other than making money. Just try. Try to tell a mouse that there's something higher than cheese. Did you ever preach to a mouse? Very difficult. So with his small vision of reality, he arrogantly, this is illusion. This is the nature of false ego. He assumes this is what's real. So to understand the totality of reality and what God's capacity is, to really get a glimpse of that, we can only truly do this through the understanding of Krishna himself, and we're dependent upon what he reveals. Because Sukadeva Goswami was he heard from in disciplic succession, and because he is so deeply realized, therefore he is called most powerful Sukadeva Goswami, because he has a great grasp of reality. So Maharaj Prickett says, I wish to hear from you of the pastimes of that fish incarnation. So the materialistic mind again says, no, how is that possible? How could God be a fish? Well, the materialistic mind is right. God never is a fish. When Krishna is in the form of Matsya, even though he appears to be a fish, he's not a fish. He's still Krishna. He's still God. It's God in that form. He's always transcendental. He's always unlimited. Just like we saw with Vamandeva. Although he was just a dwarf, his steps reached to the top of the universe and pierced the universe. So he wasn't a dwarf, he was God. But yet he was in a dwarf's form. But yet that form of a dwarf was actually him, but it wasn't an ordinary form of a dwarf. It wasn't a limited dwarf form, but it was actually fully transcendental, fully composed of bliss and knowledge. This is the process of understanding the Absolute Truth, and there's no other way. We have to hear from authorities. Very difficult. Very difficult. The mind wants to reject. And in Kali Yuga, it's especially difficult because all the authorities, it's becoming, and it will become even more so, the authorities in Kali Yuga, they prove themselves corrupt. So therefore, the living entity who wants to think himself the center of the world gets all the justification for doing so. How could I listen to him? How could I believe this one? Everyone in Kali Yuga, all the authorities, this is Kali's method. He corrupts them, all the authorities. Previously, if someone was a great leader of the country, if he was the president or the king, people had so much respect for him. But nowadays, people just laugh. The politicians, the whole democratic experiment. People have, they're more interested in the World Cup. A few years ago, last time there was a World Cup, 4 years ago in soccer, they had the same day there was an Irish in Ireland. There was a referendum about whether they wanted some very important thing to occur or not. And at the same time, their football team was playing, and so few people voted because they couldn't be bothered. They couldn't pull themselves away. People are so cynical. Such a failure, democracy. Because people think, what's the difference? Which rotten apple I choose? They're all rotten. They've lost their enthusiasm. Corruption. So this is Kali Yuga. It ruins our natural trust of authority. But this is the process. Nevertheless, this is the process of gaining understanding of that which is beyond our perception and our ability to perceive. We have to hear from transcendental authorities such as the Bhagavatam and Sukadeva Goswami and his representatives. So Maharaj Prickett continued, what was the purpose for which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish? Exactly as an ordinary living being accepts different forms under the laws of karma. The form of a fish is certainly condemned and full of terrible pain. Oh my Lord, what was the purpose of this incarnation? Kindly explain this to us, for hearing about the pastimes of the Lord is auspicious for everyone. I'll read just the ending of Prabhupada's purport. Vamanadeva, for example, appeared to save the devotee Bali Maharaj. Similarly, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of a fish, when the Lord accepted the form of a fish, it wasn't abominable. But a fish's birth in the material world is an abominable birth. It's a horrible birth. It's inflicted with so much pain and difficulty, eating such horrible things. No consciousness, practically. No consciousness, the consciousness of the natural consciousness of the soul is so retracted, so unmanifest. So why would Krishna accept this form? So Vamanadeva appeared on the request of Aditi to help the demigods, but actually to save Bali Maharaj. So Prabhupada's purport continues, he must have done so, appeared as a fish, to favor some devotee. Bali Maharaj was eager to know about the devotee for whom the Supreme Lord accepted this form. Why was he eager to know? Because when we hear about the qualities of devotees, it gives us someone to emulate. When we hear about the devotees, because everyone needs heroes. Nowadays, the heroes are not worthy of emulation. The heroes are not worthy of our following their example and their qualities. Because whoever we follow and mold ourselves around, we will gain the result that they will get. So these people, the heroes, contemporary heroes, tend to be degraded. So we don't follow the political leaders previously, even 40 years ago, there was an American president, Kennedy. When he went to his inauguration, when he became the president, he didn't wear a hat. And as a result of that, the American hat industry suffered so much because everyone stopped using hats. Because it's just natural to follow the great lead. He was admired. But today we have rejected those kind of leaders to follow, the political leaders. No one has an admiration for them. But we follow other leaders who are very, very, very degraded. Who are those other leaders? The heroes of the youth. They follow the movie stars and the singers, the bands, the singers in the bands, and the sportsmen. And these people don't have very high character. So therefore, if we follow people with low character who accrue so much bad karma in their lives and perform terrible activities, then wherever they go in their next life, whatever birth they take, then we will also follow them. Because we follow the leader is the name of the game, practically speaking. So if they take their birth as a hog, a pig, and we follow them and act the way they act, well, how will we take our next birth? Yes, would you like to be a pig? No. I don't blame you. I also wouldn't like to be a pig. So we should hear about these great personalities and see how they acted and how they thought. They're going to reveal, especially in their prayers, they reveal, they reveal how they think and what's in their heart. So we watch it very carefully and listen it and analyze and try to understand and try to mold our hearts like theirs. And again, this is ultimately we're finishing Canto 8 and we'll begin Canto 9. And this will ultimately lead us to the 10th canto. And in the 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan are illustrated. And they are the ultimate people who we have to examine their hearts and see how they think and see how they view life and see how they view God and see how they view Krishna. Yes, how they view God and how they view Krishna. For the residents of Vrindavan, they view it differently. Even though Krishna is God. Very mysterious, the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. But if we want to go there, we have to follow them. So very important to understand the consciousness and mold our hearts around the consciousness. Exemplars, spiritual exemplars. So Maharaj Prickett was very eager to understand. Interestingly enough, he was more eager to understand what devotee the Lord came to help and to have a pastime with when he came as Matsya than to even understand Matsya. And of course, if he understood the devotee, he would also hear about Matsya and understand that. But we can't understand God fully. Can't understand what it's like to be Him. We can understand what it's like to be a devotee. So Sutta Goswami replied, he said, when Maharaj Prickett thus inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, that most powerful saintly person began describing the pastimes of the Lord's incarnation as a fish. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, Brahmins, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. Like the air passing through different types of atmospheres, this is text 6, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being, sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental. Because He is above the material modes of nature, He is unaffected by higher and lower forms. So regardless of the form He takes or the mood He takes, He is always, His body is never composed of anything other than eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of the material nature. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate satcharacharam. Therefore, being the supreme controller of the laws of nature, the Lord cannot be under their influence. An example given in this regard is that although the wind blows through many places, the air is not affected by the quality of these places. Although the air sometimes carries the odor of a filthy place, the air has nothing to do with such a place. Just like if we take some red dye and put it in the water, and we say, and I ask you, what color is the water? What would you say? If you put red dye in the water and I say, what color is the water? What would you say?
Red.
Right. But is the water actually red? No, there's dye mixed in with the water. It's a colloidal solution where there are red particles suspended in the water, but the water is always actually separate, even though it appears to be red. It appears to our eyes to be red, but those who have knowledge actually know that the redness is not the color of the water, it's the color of the dye. And you can separate them out again. So similarly, Krishna, those who have knowledge understand that Krishna has nothing to do with the material energy, even though He appears to be in the material world. So He's never affected by the material qualities like an ordinary living entity. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jangunan. When the living entity is in the material nature, he is affected by its qualities. He's overcome by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is not affected. Disrespectfully, one who does not know this considers the Supreme Personality of Godhead an ordinary living being. Avajananti mam mudha parambhavam ajanataha. Such a conclusion is reached by the unintelligent because they are unaware of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So we're going to hear about the Lord's coming as a fish. As if a fish, we can say, or an extraordinary fish. And we will hear, when the Lord comes like a fish, He's certainly not ordinary. O King Prickett, at the end of the past millennium, at the end of Brahma's day, because Lord Brahma sleeps during the night, an annihilation took place. Annihilation took place, and the three worlds were covered by the water of the ocean. At the end of Brahma's day, when Brahma felt sleepy and desired to lie down, the Vedas were emanating from his mouth, and the great demon named Hayagriva stole the Vedic knowledge. Understanding the acts of the great devotee Hayagriva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who was full of all opulences, assumed the form of a fish and saved the Vedas by killing that demon, the demon. Prabhupada's very short purport. Because everything was inundated by water, To save the Vedas, it was necessary for the Lord to assume the form of a fish. During the Chakshusha Manvantara, there was a great king named Satyavrata. So this is a second appearance of Matsya. There was a great king named Satyavrata who was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Satyavrata performed austerities by subsisting only on water. Purport. The Lord assumed one fish incarnation to save the Vedas at the beginning of the Swayambhuva Manvantara. And at the end of the Chakshushan Manvantara, the Lord again assumed the form of a fish, just to favor the great king named Satyavrata. As there were two incarnations of Varaha, there were also two incarnations of fish. The Lord appeared as one fish incarnation to save the Vedas by killing Hayagriva, and he assumed the other fish incarnation to show favor to King Satyavrata. Text 11. In this millennium, which is the present millennium, King Satyavrata later became the son of Vivashan, the king of the sun planet, and was known as Shraddhadev. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was given the post of Manav. So this king that we're going to hear about actually became empowered by the Lord and became one of the Manavs. One day, while King Satyavrata was performing austerities by offering water on the bank of the river Kritamala, a small fish appeared in the water in his palm. So this is the system. When one wants to offer, pray to the Ganges or something, one takes some water from the Ganges and offers it to the Ganges. So he picked up some water and he noticed that in the palms of his hands was a little fish. So we can imagine how big the fish was to fit in the palms of his hands. Quite small. Satyavrata, the king of Dravida Desh, South India, threw the fish into the water of the river along with the water in his palms. So he picked it up and then, there's a fisherman. He threw it in the water. O king, he said, O king Prickit, descendant of Bharata. With an appealing voice, the poor small fish said to King Satyavrata, who was very merciful, because that's the nature of a proper leader, a person qualified to be king. He has to be merciful and compassionate and strong, but he has to care for all those who have taken shelter of him. Like a father naturally cares for his children, the king naturally cares for every one who has taken his birth in the kingdom. Not that he just cares even for the humans and then kills the animals and doesn't care for them. No. All these citizens are called praja. Everyone who has taken birth in the kingdom has rights. My dear king, the fish said in his very appealing voice, oh, my dear king, protector of the poor, why are you throwing me in the water of the river where there are other aquatics who can kill me? I'm very much afraid of them. To please himself, King Satyavrata, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection, because it's the pleasure of a king to give others protection. Purport. Here is an example of giving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even without knowledge. Because he didn't know the fish was the Supreme Lord, but yet he decided to give it protection. Such service without knowledge is called agyata sukriti. King Satyavrata wanted to show his own mercy, not knowing that the fish was Lord Vishnu. By such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Service rendered to the Supreme Lord, knowingly or unknowingly, never goes in vain. The merciful king, being moved by the pitiable words of the fish, placed the fish in a water jug, and brought him to his own residence. But in one night, in other words, the next morning, next day, but in one night that fish grew so much that he could not move his body comfortably in the water of the pot. He then spoke to the king as follows. Oh, my dear king, I do not like living in this water pot with such great difficulty. Therefore, please find some better reservoir of water where I can live comfortably." Then, taking the fish out of the water pot, the king threw him in a large well. But within a moment, the fish developed to the length of 3 cubits. Does anyone know how long a cubit is? I know. Yes, from the tip of the finger to the elbow, approximately 18 inches, depending upon how long fingers you have in your elbows, etc. Approximately 18 inches, so in those days they measured in cubits. So he expanded up to, who could someone convert that to metric, please? It's 48 inches. Anyway, huh? Okay, approximately a meter, maybe even a bit more. So he expanded to a big fish before he fit in the palm of his hand, and suddenly he was this big. This is a real fish story that we're going to hear. He was this big. The fish then said, "My dear king, this reservoir of water," he was in a well, "is not fit for my happy residence. Please give me a more extensive pool of water, for I have taken shelter of you." "Oh, Maharaj Prickett," the king took the water from the well and threw him in a lake. But the fish then assumed a gigantic form exceeding the extent of the water. The fish then said, "O king, I am a large aquatic, and this water is not at all suitable for me. Now kindly find some way to save me. It would be better to put me in the water of a lake that will never reduce," because lake water sometimes, when it's hot, in the summer season, they reduce, and in the rainy season, they expand. When thus requested, King Satyavrata took the fish to the largest reservoir of water. When that also proved insufficient, the king at last threw the gigantic fish into the ocean. While being thrown in the ocean, the fish said to King Satyavrata, "O hero, in this water there are very powerful and dangerous sharks that will eat me. Therefore, you should not throw me in this place." Now, what was he going to do next? where is larger than the ocean? He's already expanded himself. After hearing these sweet words, because he was taking shelter of the king continuously. After hearing these sweet words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a fish, the king, being bewildered, asked him, "Who are you, sir? You simply bewilder us." And just imagine if Krishna is all powerful, how sweet and appealing he can make his voice when he asks for shelter. So really pulled upon the heart of the king. But yet the king was bewildered. What to do? What can I do next? So Satyavrata said, "My lord, in one day you have expanded yourself for hundreds of miles, covering the water of the river and the ocean. Before this, I had never seen or heard of such an aquatic animal. My lord, you are certainly the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, Sri Hari. It is to show your mercy to the living entities that you have now assumed the form of an aquatic. O my lord, master of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, O best of enjoyers, Lord Vishnu, you are the leader and destination of surrendered devotees like us. Therefore, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. All your pastimes and incarnations certainly appear for the welfare of all living entities. Therefore, my lord, I wish to know the purpose for which you have assumed this form of a fish." See, he was a devotee and he was performing his austerities, subsisting only on water, praying at the riverbank, in the river. So he was a devotee, and devotees always have in their mind some service, or they want to be with the Lord and perform some service. So then the Lord came in a very mysterious way to Satyavrata, and Satyavrata, after the Lord played these tricks on him, he asked him, "Why have you come?" He recognized that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he said, "Why have you come? What purpose have you assumed this form of a fish?" Oh my Lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus. So the fish was very beautiful. The worship of the demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. Because you are the supreme friend and dear most super soul of everyone. Worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifest yourself. Your form is a fish. Text 31. Sukadeva Goswami said, when King Satyavrata spoke in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who at the end of the Yuga had assumed the form of a fish to benefit his devotee and enjoy his pastimes in the water of inundation, responded as follows. So the Lord wanted to, just like we like to go to the ocean and swim around and enjoy in the water, so Krishna also has a tendency to want to enjoy in the water. But who can really, really swim better in the water? Best in the water. It's a fish. So when the Lord takes a form of a fish, he wants to enjoy in that particular way, his water sports. So that was one of the reasons why he came. And another reason he wanted to benefit his devotee Satyavrata Muni. So later on in the chapter we'll hear how he benefited Satyavrata Muni. But the Supreme Personality of God had replied to him when he said, why have you come? He said, O king who can subdue your enemies, on the seventh day from today, the three worlds, Bhu, Bhuva, Sva, will all merge into the water of inundation. It was time for a devastation. When all the three worlds merge into the water, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Thereafter, O king, you shall collect all types of herbs and seeds and load them on that great boat. Then, accompanied by the seven rishis and surrounded by all kinds of living entities, you shall get aboard that boat, and without moroseness, you shall easily travel with your companions on the ocean of inundation, the only illumination being the effulgence of the great rishis, the great sages. Then, as the boat is tossed about by the powerful winds, attach the vessel to my horn. So this fish had a great horn. By means of the great serpent Vasuki, for I shall be present by your side. Pulling the boat with you and all the rishis in it, O king, I shall travel in the water of devastation until the night of Lord Brahma's slumber is over. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. This particular devastation actually took place not during the night of Lord Brahma, but during his day. For it was during the time of Chakshushamanu. Brahma's night takes place when Brahma goes to sleep. But in the daytime there are 14 Manus, one of whom is Chakshushamanu. Therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that although it was daytime for Lord Brahma, Brahma felt sleepy for a short time by the supreme will of the Lord. This short period is regarded as Lord Brahma's night. This has been elaborately discussed by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Laghu Bhagavatamrita. The following is a summary of his analysis. Because Agastya Muni cursed Swayambhuva Manu during the time of Swayambhuva Manu, a devastation took place. This devastation is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. During the time of Chakshushamanu, by the supreme will of the Lord, there was suddenly another pralaya or devastation. So amazing things happen as the pastimes of the Lord and for the Lord's own purposes. So many different things go on at once for Krishna's purposes. He has a full understanding of reality again. And we only see the little amount that we are allowed to see. Text 38. The Lord continued to speak to Satyavrata Muni. You will be thoroughly advised and favored by me. And because of your inquiries, everything about my glories, which are known as Param Brahma, will be manifest within your heart. Thus you will know everything about me. Prabhupada's purpose. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya Chaham Riddhi Sanavisto Matya Smitam Gyanam Aponam Cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, is situated in everyone's heart, and from Him come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Lord reveals Himself in proportion to one's surrender to Him. Yayatam mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. In response of cooperation, the Lord reveals Himself in proportion to one's surrender. That which is revealed to one who fully surrenders is different from what is revealed to one who surrenders partially. Everyone naturally surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, either directly or indirectly. The conditioned soul surrenders to the laws of nature and material existence. But when one fully surrenders to the Lord, material nature does not act upon him. Such a fully surrendered soul is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. Mameva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. One who has fully surrendered to the Lord has no fear of the modes of material nature, for everything is but an expansion of the Lord's glories, savam kalavidam brahma. And these glories are gradually revealed and realized. The Lord is the supreme purifier, param brahma, param dhamma, pavitram, paramam bhavan. The more one is purified and the more he wants to know about the supreme, the more the Lord reveals to him. Full knowledge of Brahma, Paramatma, and Bhagavan is revealed to the pure devotees. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 10:11, Tesham evanakam partam aham agyanajam tama nashyam yatma bhavasto gyanadipena bhasvata. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So this verse explains that the Lord told Satyavrata Muni that I will reveal myself fully in your heart, all my glories. And Prabhupada's purport explained in a very wonderful way this concept of that our consciousness, the amount of the expansiveness of our consciousness, or the amount of reality that we are allowed to perceive. Again, Krishna is the only one who perceives all of reality, because he's God, he knows everything. The amount of reality we're allowed to perceive comes from how Krishna reciprocates with us. And how does Krishna reciprocate with us? According to our desire and according to what we deserve, according to our karma. It's interesting, very interesting. Did you ever notice that, say, if you have to buy a car, and you start looking for cars, then everywhere you look, you see cars for sale. And if you have to buy a house, you see houses for sale everywhere. Because of the desire one has, Krishna reciprocates with that and one sees that. So if our consciousness becomes very pure and we want to see God, we will see Him everywhere by His grace. This is all reciprocation with Krishna. We can't change our consciousness by our own power. We can desire and then accept how Krishna reciprocates with us. But we are very small and dependent. So the devotee's business is to make the attempt to increase his desire to love Krishna. That will expand his consciousness to the fullest by Krishna's grace. And the fullest expansion is love for Krishna. This is the fullest and natural, most natural expansion of the soul's consciousness when he loves Krishna. Prema, pamarto mahanam. This is the great gain of human life, the opportunity, the tarapadruva martyrdom, the opportunity that human life offers. So now, even though we have a capacity, because we're souls, each one of us are souls, we're a soul, we have a capacity, but our capacity is so constricted.
Why has Krishna restricted our capacities? Because our desires are very meager. Even though we are souls, we don't desire like a soul, because a soul naturally desires to love Krishna. That's the natural position of the soul. But we're desiring as if we were bodies. And therefore, because our desires are restricted and constricted, therefore we have constricted consciousness. So when the devotees, their consciousness is very, very broad, therefore they're called Mahatmas, unrestricted, unconstricted, very broad, broad consciousness. Because they desire, even if they may not be fully developed, but their desire is to love Krishna. So this is the spark that has to be fanned into a blazing fire to increase our desire to love Krishna. And then we'll see how we accept how Krishna reciprocates with us. And of course, if one is trying to light a fire, what one should put fuel on it. And the fuel is the hearing and the chanting and association. And what one shouldn't do is put water on the fire. And the water is no one knows, because everyone is so pure. Yeah, sinful activities, offenses, desires for sense enjoyment, like that. Because that's one of the problems. We give Krishna mixed messages of what we want. On one level, we want something so wonderful, but another level, it's not quite our time, maybe. So we have to inflame that desire. Like the great devotees, like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, or let's read actually about Prabhupada. How incredibly bright the flame of his desire to love and serve Krishna was. I remember reading in TKG's diary about Prabhupada on his, practically he couldn't move, because he was so close to the time of his departure from this world. And he was talking about going out and preaching and doing this and going and doing that and doing this and doing that. Incredible! This was his ecstasy of intense desire that was unconstricted by his body. His body wouldn't allow him to do it, practically speaking. But his desire was in that way always, and he always pushes. It was always like that with Prabhupada. His desire to serve and love Krishna, love and serve Krishna, was always expanded to the fullest. Incredible. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would talk about Krishna. They would pay obeisances. They would pray. They would write. They would speak to people about Krishna. They wouldn't have time for eating and sleeping. The desire was burning so brightly. This is a devotee. So we hear about them and see how their mentality is and understand this is the price to pay if one wants that result. And so kindly, Srila Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Prickett, Sutta Goswami, all these great personalities are revealing to us these mentalities within the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada, of course, kindly, and the commentators and Prabhupada kindly translating it. So after thus instructing the king, the Supreme Personality of Godhead immediately disappeared. The big, big, huge fish that had previously been a little fish disappeared. Then King Satyavrata began to wait for that time of which the Lord had instructed. After spreading Kusha with its tips pointed east, the saintly king, himself facing the northeast, sat down on the grass and began to meditate
upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who had assumed the form of a fish. Thereafter, gigantic clouds pouring incessant water swelled the ocean more and more. Thus the ocean began to overflow onto the land and inundate the entire world. As Satyavrata remembered the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he saw a boat coming near him. Thus he collected herbs and creepers, and accompanied by saintly brahmanas, he got aboard the boat. The saintly brahmanas, being pleased with the king, said to him, "O king, please meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead Keshava. He will save us from this impending danger and arrange for our well-being." Then, while the king constantly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a large golden fish appeared in the ocean of inundation. The fish had one horn and was 8 million miles long. That's very big. Following the instructions formally given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the king anchored the boat to the fish's horn, using the serpent Vasuki as a rope. Thus being satisfied, he began offering prayers to the Lord. So tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we shall hear the prayers that Satyavrata offered to the Lord. 8 million miles long, the fish. So someone could say, "How is that possible?" And we could say, "Well, if God wants to do that, who is going to stop him? After all, he's God. He's making planets float in space. He's doing this, he's doing that. If he wants to manifest himself as an 8 million mile long fish, that's his desire. And he shall do it." Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Inundation is the only three words.
During a nap that
it's
Brahma took.
The planet, in other words, it's the whole...
The whole bowl gets full. Oh, practically speaking. Yep.
The story of the boat is reminiscent of the biblical story of Noah's Ark.
In every culture, there's always a story of a flood. Every culture has it. So
Muslim tradition has the same thing.
Well, they have the same as the biblical tradition. They're all based on the Bible. But every culture, not only.
What other cultures are there apart from the Bible and this one?
Well, all the rest of them. I've studied this point. No, you know, there's, you know, American Indian cultures, and you can research the Australian Aboriginal cultures and see if they have it. So, and this is because there's something in the Vedic culture on it. This is the original culture, and it's transmuted as it comes through time, thousands of years. Any other questions? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Satyavrata Muni ki jai, Matsya Avatar ki jai.